because taboos are, they're such a good example of like how an old way of thinking manifests itself and kind of stays present over generations, and they exist so that things don't change.
This is Dear Future, I'm Ready, a podcast brought to you from Amsterdam by Digital Society School and Transformational Studio. Your hosts for today are Carola Vashore and Marco van Hout.
Welcome to 21 for 21 with Lauren Curry. Lauren Curry, OBE, is the founder of Upfront, on a mission to change confidence. She's a trustee of the Design Council and chairperson of the UK's leading maternity discrimination charity, Pregnant, Then Screwed. In 2017, Lauren was awarded an Order of the British Empire, OBE, for her services to design and diversity. 21 for 21 is a podcast about transformation. This is happening right now, and it is complex, which is why we are talking to 21 transformational leaders. People who are ahead of the curve, and to whom we can ask what the view's like from their perspective, to inspire us in our transformational journeys. Today we will talk with Lauren about confidence, the power of design, about the need of diversity and inclusion, and about amplifying people's voices. But let's first start with hearing Lauren's voice. So welcome to the show, Lauren.
Hello, hello, good to be here.
Our pleasure.
So happy to have you.
So let's get right to it. We are in a context of paradigm shifts, and it feels like the end of an era. Systems are collapsing, new ways of working, doing and living are emerging as the old ways fail to deliver. Technology is disruptive and climate is at crisis. Challenges arise on many, many fronts. So Lauren, what do you make of all of this?
Yeah, and this, it feels big, you know, a lot of the things you've just described, they are big. It's a lot to get my head around and try and process and make sense of. And, you know, the way I think about it is that these paradigm shifts are opportunities for progress. You know, everywhere we look, whether that's in our political parties, to the conversations that are happening around our own dinner tables about race, you know, we can see that the kind of old way of being and the old way of doing is failing us. And that recognition is exactly what you need to then create new norms and new routines and new rituals and new ways of being and doing. When, you know, when systems collapse, change happens. And, you know, you mentioned the climate crisis. It is very real, and there is a very real timestamp on that crisis. And I certainly don't profess to have, you know, any coherent thoughts on that specific crisis, but I definitely feel the weight and the fear around the damage that has been done, the damage that is currently being done, is the damage that is currently happening to this one and only earth that we have. And it's incredibly, incredibly scary. You know, I definitely feel out of my depth and I think pessimistic when it comes to that specific part of the shift and the crises that we are witnessing. But there's a lot in the other things that you mentioned that actually I feel very hopeful about. And you know, the reason for that is I think COVID-19, and it has been a tragedy for so many, many people, and is still causing a huge amount of harm, you know, as we speak. But at the same time, it has revealed something that we couldn't see before, or if we could see it, we weren't paying attention, which is the scale of inequality. You know, I think this global pandemic has pulled back the curtain and let us see the depth of injustice and inequality, and also the scale of the problems that we need to address, the scale of racism and bias, the scale of incompetence we can see at leadership levels across the board, from political parties to corporations, you know, to local businesses at home. And I really hope that I believe that the kind of sight and exposure of the reality and the work that needs to be done is the first stage of change and the work that will follow.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the Lauren I know and love. Certainly, I've had the absolute pleasure of knowing you for many years now. Yeah. Even from back in the day where some of us knew you as a red daughter. And even back then, you had the wonderful pioneering capability of literally taking a red marker and putting circles around the things that were plain wrong and making them, bringing them out in the open, making them visible for those of us who couldn't and even those who wouldn't see. And these, this way of looking at the world, these practices have become absolutely important because as change agents, it's also our role to help change the narrative. And perhaps one of the blessings in disguise of the COVID crisis is that the sense of awareness is very heightened. And there is a need really for facing up to the facts, facing up to the madness, facing up to what Genesis once called the land of confusion. And it's hard to do because we need to transform while the world keeps spinning. We can't just, you know, press a pause button or stop our daily activities. We just have to really carry on and transform as we go. What do we need? Of course, we need one another, but what else might help us in the context of creating change that is meaningful, that is lasting, that is equitable, that addresses what needs to be addressed?
I love your headline of "We need each other." You know, that feels like a very beautiful, poetic version of my longer thinking. The Red Daughters are still very much alive and kicking, but I still don't have sponsor from Moleskin. So maybe this podcast will be the one that finally someone from Moleskin will buy me a Red Daughter. But yeah, so gosh, how do we keep going and how do we make a difference in amongst the chaos? And, you know, I think it's a question that is on so many minds. I have a version of this conversation often, and sometimes it comes from a place of fear of, am I doing the right thing? Am I doing enough? Other times it comes from a place of despair. Doesn't matter what I do, these systems are too big. Other times it comes from a place of exhaustion. You know, I know for the women of color in my life that this conversation, it does feel new for me and new for, I'm sure, many people listening. But for many Black and Brown people, this conversation has been at the forefront of their mind, you know, for hundreds of decades of years. And I think for me, it's always about power. You know, that's why I talk about this idea of helping women to see and use the power that they already have. Because when you focus on the power that you do have, it's coming at this conversation from a place of abundance, a place of optimism, a place of hope, and a place of collectively, as you say, when we have each other, we are bigger than any institution, than any corporation, than any, you know, policy, that when it's just you and a blank screen in your Google search bar, feels like a mountain that you could never climb. And I really love, there's an analogy by a feminist marketing expert called Kelly Deals. I'm a big fan of her newsletter. And she talked about the metaphor of imagining these crises and all of their different shapes and forms. They're a wall. Okay, you know, we're facing this huge wall that has a scale so vast that, you know, any one of us as individuals can't quite get our head around the scale of this wall. And when you're stood in front of it as little old you, of course you're going to think, what's the point? Where do I even start? I'm overwhelmed, I'm scared, I'm sad. But when you look down at your toolkit and think, hey, I've got this pickaxe, you know, and that pickaxe is the metaphor for your ability to tell stories, for your ability to make sense of data, for your ability to help children find happiness through singing. You know, I don't know what you, only you will know what your tool is. And when you engage with that tool and you look to your left and your right and up and down, and there are hundreds and millions of other people standing at the wall with their tool. And it's this notion that you have to focus on the part of the wall that you can see and feel and touch, and the tools that you have. And that really just blew me away, because for me, it's such a powerful visual that helps me not get overwhelmed with, you know, it's that old age thing of, you know, you solve a problem, you create other problems in other places, and it all just is so interconnected and complex and systemic. But when you focus on, you know, the sphere of influence is another great way to think about it. What is your sphere of influence? What do you have power over? And it's about being there in a way that is using what you already have, and also taking power, you know, not waiting for permission. I meet a lot of people who are waiting for somebody else to come and fix this. They're waiting for somebody to come and rescue them, or somebody to come and make better the problem that's keeping them up at night. And, you know, I want to say to you, like, nobody is coming. There is nobody coming to rescue me or you or any of us. We have to take responsibility for this ourselves. And we have to do what we can with our own sphere of influence. And you're so right about the point of how do you do that in a way that is long-lasting and sustainable. And I know for me, you know, I've been doing this work for 13 years, and I think I've definitely had quite a significant shift in my thinking around longevity. And, you know, part of me is the impatient designer that's just desperate to prototype and desperate to make and build and ship and test and learn. And, you know, that's a part that I honor and would never change. But I hold my hand up and say, like, that isn't always the best course of action, because the problems that we're talking about in this conversation that you both, you know, this framing that you've set up around the paradigm shifts, these things are decades and decades of work. You know, some of this stuff will still, this conversation will still be happening when the three of us aren't here anymore. You know, it'll be our grandchildren's children who are having a version of this conversation. And like when you frame it that way, I think the things that come to mind for me is our relationship with rest and our relationship with pausing and stopping, because I think a consequence of our relationship with our phones and the internet means that we are constantly bombarded with messages about how deep these crises are. And that might be a Twitter feed, it might be a news headline, but it means that our bodies are existing in a constant state of alert and panic. And of course, depending on the color of your skin, depending on where you live in the world, that will have, you know, that will have a big role to play in how deeply you're affected by these things. And that effect is very real. You know, we're talking about anxiety, stress, depression, burnout, chronic fatigue, exhaustion. And I'm just at the start of my journey of kind of trying to understand and unpick the relationship between rest and capitalism, and this notion that we're all taught from a very young age that our self-worth is attached to being traditionally productive.
Yeah, to a degree, we are very much enslaved to that model, to a model of performance. And I think also relating to your previous point, we have to be, on the one hand, of course, grateful, but particularly aware of our privilege in that, as you said, you know, people who are waiting for to be rescued, you can hear the bells ringing in the background. That rescue is not going to come. It's up to you. But at the same time, that rhetoric feeds this sense of you've got to do it by yourself. And that does lead to a lot of anxiety, and that does lead to a lot of issues, because the first question, and that's where the design abilities come in, the first question that arises is, yes, but how am I going to do this? How am I going to put this into action? I see that it's needed. I feel that it's needed. It's burning inside of me. And I just don't know, where are the others? And this is where it relates to the others, and that this is something I've always admired you and your work in. I'm much more of a revolutionary than you are. And actually that ends up biting me in the butt, because it's very frustrating. I just like, okay, let's do it. And sometimes that's not the wisest choice. So the wise choice is perhaps one of understanding. And we women are slow to understand that at times, that we are role models to one another all of the time, in every single choice that we make, in every meeting that we're at, where we see that there is an uneven distribution of people in the meeting making a decision that involves numerous stakeholders, someone has to say, hey, you know what? We might be missing someone in the room. We might have forgotten to ask some questions. Maybe we're moving too quickly through issues. And this realization that we are role models to one another continuously in, you know, simple things like back in the day when we actually took buses and went places, or airplanes and went places, giving the seat to someone else, making room for other people, all of these things, we're being watched continuously because we imitate both negative and positive behaviors. And it feels like we've gone viral, not only in COVID terms, we've gone viral in some very toxic ways of doing and of being that need to be readdressed. But sometimes some of us may be in places where that feels like a very steep mountain to climb. And so that's where that really comes in. And your work at Upfront is so important in allowing that to unfold. Tell us more about your work at Upfront.
Yeah, of course. So Upfront is an organization on a mission to change confidence, not women. And I say that with emphasis, because one of the reasons that Upfront exists is because confidence, in the broadest sense of public speaking, taking up space, advocating for yourself, advocating for others, asking for what you need, it shows up very differently for different genders. And the majority of literature and products and narratives that exist in the world around confidence are not designed with women in mind. You know, we've kind of got the Tony Robbins, Gary Vee narrative of masculinity being about dominance and wealth. Then we have kind of another version, which is, I feel, can sometimes feel quite elitist, around kind of arts and drama led, you know, find your confidence through your breath and your relationship with your body. And there is a huge opportunity and a huge need and a demand for a new kind of conversation about confidence that is rooted in the fact that low confidence is a consequence of your environment. And the work to be done here is about changing existing systems and structures and creating new environments where a whole range of different voices and leadership styles can thrive, rather than the current narrative, which is one of, there is one version of confidence that all of us are conditioned to believe is the preferable one, which is usually masculine, alpha, white, extroverted, often American. And if you don't fit that mold as a woman, you're told that there's something wrong with you and that you must bend and bend and mold yourself to fit that. If you are a woman of color, you display versions of this confidence, you're told that you're too much. And any woman who displays a combination of these things in a way that's not that mold we've described is told that it's unacceptable. And the consequence of that plays out in so many aspects of our life, from our family living room to the school gates to the boardroom to our career development. And upfront is building, you know, I talk about building a confidence revolution, and we're doing this through bonds. So bond is the collective noun for a group of women. We run 6-week programs. Each cohort is a bond. So the fourth bond starts in the 7th of June, which I'm super excited about. And we have an upfront global community bond, which is a membership space for women who are building new muscles around confidence. And of course, that's another thing that might be new to some of your listeners. It is a muscle. It's something that anyone can learn. It's not something you're born with. It's not innate within you. You learn confidence the same way you learn to play basketball or you learn to breastfeed. And these are really powerful muscles that I believe do play a really important part in the conversation that we're having, because part of the reason that a lot of these shifts and tragedies that we've talked about have happened is because of systemic racism, bias, sexism, ageism. And those systems have led to the people at the very top who make decisions and hold the power and the wealth being majoritatively being middle-aged, privately educated white men. And that means that, I mean, we saw in the UK this week, there was an article in The Guardian that outlined why the COVID strategy from the UK government did not consider gender at any point. And that's what happens when you have policies created by people who all come from the same social group. And of course, we need to change the systems that are around that, but we also need to raise awareness and start conversations to help women understand the problem does not lie with you. The problem lies with the system that we're trying to make change in. So now we know that, let's get to work.
That's right. Now we know that, let's bring our intention.
Yeah.
Let's really design our way to change the system.
Yeah, and actually, as a white man of middle-aged white man, of course, I feel that you speak to me. And what can I do? Can you say something about that?
Yeah, my favorite question, Marco, thank you. So first, you have to send this episode to all of your friends who look and sound like you, so they also hear my answer.
Consider it done.
And, you know, the first thing is to recognize the power and the privilege that you hold in every space that you are in, you know, to really reflect on how you have benefited from the systems existing as they are, which mean for most of your life, most rooms that you've walked into, the color of your skin has not been a reason for you to feel uncomfortable in those spaces, and your gender hasn't been a reason for you to be treated differently in those spaces. So I think it's that's about kind of work on an individual level. And then the next layer out is with your family, with your friends, with your co-workers, you know, having a version of this conversation, calling sexism and racism out when you hear it. And often it's these moments that might be passed off as, oh, you know, he's just joking, this is just his way, or I know there's an event and we've got no women of color speakers, but, you know, we asked a few and they all said no. Or, you know, it's these kind of moments that it's in that moment where you need to choose, you know, I'm going to be uncomfortable. I'm going to say something. It's probably going to make other people uncomfortable too, but we need people like you to do that. Like in fact, it's a necessity that people like you do that if we're going to get through to the other side of some of the problems we're talking about. And then the really practical ask I have is to tell the women in your network, professional orbit, what you earn. because that act, and again, you might be squirming at the thought, it might make you feel uncomfortable.
It does.
And that would be very valid. That would be very valid, because we're taught to keep these things a taboo so that they don't change. But we know that there is an intense gender pay gap. There is an intense ethnicity pay gap. Yeah. And one of the most powerful ways we overcome that, which we all have at our disposal, is to tell each other what we earn. Because when you tell women and men and women of color who do a similar job to you what you earn, and then that moment, if they realize that they are paid less than you or they are charging less than you, that information you have given them is a ticket to financial, is a ticket to them getting the financial compensation that they are worth. Mm-hmm. But it's very difficult to start that journey when you don't have the data. Most of us have an assumption.
Also, and I think that is the most interesting aspect, by addressing the taboo, we remove the toxicity of it. Because the thing is that, of course, there is assumption, but there's also presumption. And if people feel that they're not being treated fairly, it's also a good thing that when they are, that comes to the light, so that they can relax into it and they can then go back to the point that you mentioned about the wool and the picket, and realizing that now they can relax into their talent and go make a difference with it, knowing that all the other aspects are considered and brought in a fair way. So it's again one of those topics where we need one another. We need one another to bring the issues to the table, to help one another notice.
I was going to say, I think the very notion of a taboo is actually super relevant to what you and Marco are setting up here with a series of conversations, because taboos are, they're such a good example of like how an old way of thinking manifests itself and kind of stays present over generations, and they exist so that things don't change. And I just think that's a, for me, I find that a helpful way to think about it. It's like, oh, this makes me feel uncomfortable. You know, for women, we have, I mean, we could do a whole podcast. It's like periods, menopause, giving birth, breastfeeding, like mental, where do you even begin? There's so many, and we're taught to not talk about any of it. And I'll bet each of us have got really powerful stories and really profound moments that have happened in our life where we've had a conversation with somebody and we've decided, you know what, I'm going to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And something amazing happens when you break, when you say, I'm taking this taboo out of the space. And that's what I'm trying to do with the Bonds, which is a digital space, but one that is high trust, high safety. And it's a space for women. You know, they tell me I'm talking about things here that I wouldn't talk about with my professional co-workers, and I also probably wouldn't talk about with my family. And I'm able to dig into, you know, money is something that, you know, my relationship with money is a super common one, because it is very particular to women. You know, we're conditioned to think about money in a very different way to that than men are. And, you know, the consequences of that are everywhere. And they're not good.
As said, we have a narrative that needs changing, and it's a system narrative. It's not only a personal or individual narrative. We're all part of it. Yeah,
definitely. So thank you so much, Lauren. And we're going to close very soon. We haven't promised our audience any answers. We've said that we would generate new questions. I think, at least for myself, I heard a lot of things that I question a lot of the things that I do. So that's important. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. And thank you for helping plant the seeds for those, you know, questions to also for the audience. So to close, I mean, you have seen behind us on the wall in our studio, you have seen the sentence, Dear Future, I'm ready. And we would like you to actually finish that line and say, Dear Future, I'm ready. And then, just fill it in by whatever comes to your mind and how you are ready for this future. And perhaps also rallying for the people that have to join you in that future. So, Dear Future, I'm ready, according to Lauren.
Dear future, I'm ready for you. Let's do this together.
That's a beautiful ending. Let's join.
Yes.
Thanks so much, Lauren.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Really, Lauren, you're always a great inspiration.
Oh, thank you.
Dear Future.
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 Dear Future, I'm ready.
This is Dear Future, I'm ready.
Dear Future, I'm ready.
Thank you for listening to Dear Future, I'm Ready. Curious about our next or previous episodes? Please find us on digitalsocietyschool.org or on your favorite podcast or music platform under Dear Future, I'm Ready, and subscribe today. Are you or your team interested in really getting hands-on with the practice of transformation design, sustainability by design, or diversity and inclusion? Check out our professional courses on digitalsocietyschool.org and sign up today for one of our truly transformational learning experiences. For help at an organizational level, check out Transformational Studio, a transformation design agency with the aim of revolutionizing change through design and making transformation irresistible. Check them out at transformation.studio.